If you're running a business, you probably always are asking yourself, what can I do in the sales game? And if you're anything like me, you really don't like having to put on that sales hat. So today, my guest is going to talk to us about some simple steps and ideas to totally change that game.
You're listening to Leadership Powered by Common Sense with your host, Doug Thorpe. Here's Doug.
Welcome, everyone. You are listening to another episode of Leadership Powered by Common Sense. I am your host, Doug Thorpe. And today I've got Mr. Chandler Walker from the Reno, Tahoe area. I always like to get the geography in there. Chandler, welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show. Like we were saying a minute ago, we have snow, 80 degrees, rain. We just can't figure out where we want to be in the weather. So I'm just going to stay inside and make sure that I don't really get exposed to the elements.
There you go. That sounds like a plan. Well, it's a pleasure to have you on the show here today. And I am excited to get into this. When I read your bio and the first time we talked, I sure got excited about it because I'm definitely a business owner that hates the responsibility to go out and do sales for my business. I just don't like doing that. Don't want to show up that way. Don't want to be the sleazeball used car kind of guy trying to pitch things. And, you know, maybe that tells you volumes about how I think about sales, but I hope you're going to help me and help everybody else that's in the audience today. So, Chandler, first, give us a little bit of backstory. How did you kind of evolve into the guru that you are today?
Yeah, so it goes way back to when I was a kid. I grew up with a bipolar mom. And when you grow up with someone who has bipolar disorder, you have to learn, and I was young, so you have to learn how to communicate with the individual and walk them off the high cliffs and the low cliffs and ultimately learn how to communicate in a way to where you're not being emotional. You step outside of your own ego and your own mind and your own thoughts and step into theirs so you understand really how to speak to them and how to be neutral and how to walk them off the cliff. And I had to learn to do that young. And I'm not sure, maybe it was a defense mechanism. I'm not sure how I kind of figured it out as a kid, but ultimately I did. And it led me to this ability to communicate really well with people. And it put me in a position to where I'm very neutral in my temperament. I don't get really upset at things. I don't get really down on things. I've learned how to manage that. And I think that's the opposite of how most people end up in the situation. A lot of kids end up with animosity towards their parents. They end up with anger issues. And I was able to mitigate that. But the big problem growing up was, back then, mental health was something that you didn't talk about. So if she wanted to get help, it was put your head down, put a smile on your face, think happy thoughts. There's nothing wrong with you. And that was a big problem because she ultimately did get help and figure out how to do it through her own self-education. But it wasn't until my 20s that she was able to learn how to manage it. And so as I was moving into college and graduating high school and getting into my sort of adult life in college, I moved into a career to where I wanted to go into medicine. I wanted to be able to be the person who could provide proactive change to people when they were suffering in these environments. And so I went on the pathway. I studied biochemistry and molecular biology, got really deep into microbiology. I was basically a huge nerd. And I moved into the medical pathway. But the problem was, and this really disenfranchised me, I felt like all I was doing was sitting there telling people to take pills. And I felt like that was part of the equation, but it wasn't the full picture. And it's not a shot at doctors. It's the system. We don't have the capabilities to provide the follow-up beyond providing medication. And it's honestly not what I got into the game for. So I broke off at that point. And I think I had a little bit of confidence because my dad growing up sold siding and windows. So I would go to customers' houses with him. I would only go because he would buy me a donut and orange juice. That was it. If he didn't buy me that, no game, I'm out. But he bought me the donut and orange juice. So I would go to the office with him. I would watch him do his bookkeeping. I knew what his Okadata printer looked like. I went to customers' houses and watched him interact. And so it gave me the courage, I guess, to break off and open up my own business. And it's ultimately how I got into the game originally. I opened up a brick and mortar wellness facility and we sold a higher ticket service. So I had to essentially learn how to sell. And that leads to where I got disenfranchised next.
That's quite a story. And then first, let me say, you know, bless you for your journey as a young lad and having to deal with a mom that was challenged. And, you know, I know for a fact, many of us can say that we have, we get to that age in our life where we realize our parents weren't perfect. In fact, you know, they had a lot of their own demons they were fighting and struggling with and working through. So that's a great story that you were able to assimilate that and come out of it, as you say, you know, not with a lot of upset and frustration with it, but rather an empathy and an appreciation for it and ways to make it better. So kudos to you for that. Well, let's talk about this. So this next chapter of disenfranchisement, what was that about?
Yeah, so I always model my life by, okay, well, I was disenfranchised by the medical system, then this thing. And every time I get disenfranchised, I just create something. And so ultimately, when I was building this brick and mortar business, we had a higher end service for a brick and mortar health facility. Sometimes it was like $17,000 to $2,000 to work with us, which isn't an easy sell for people trying to tell them to be healthy, pay money. People don't want to pay money to be healthy. It's just not the paradigm we've created with how people think about it, because of insurance and pills and all that. So I had to learn how to sell this service. And I was able to sell it fairly well myself, but then I started to look at sales training. I thought I could be better, which is obviously usually a good thing. So I went to sales trainers and I had people help me and I had people help work through it. But I found that everybody taught me to be aggressive, to go for the close, that the call doesn't start until you get to objections. One of my favorite, if they cry, they buy. And I just felt like I was living a lie. I felt like I got in this industry to help people and make them better, but now I'm being taught to manipulate them to get them there. It felt gross. It felt icky. And it felt like I was doing something I shouldn't be doing to get people to do something that was better for them. And I felt like I had a moral crisis at hand. And honestly, for me, I would have rather just shut the business down and not do it anymore than do this to people. I just wasn't in the manipulation game. It's not the person I am. I've never been that way. And so I started looking at what my conversational modalities looked like. I started looking at, okay, how was I selling this thing before I decided to go on this coaching journey? How was I communicating? How was I getting people to buy this thing? Because they were. And so I looked at it and I was basically using the mental health curriculum that we had already designed in our mental health program. And it was a psychotherapeutic talk therapy style introduction to sales. And so I took the ideas and the modalities of cognitive behavior therapy, motivational interviewing, acceptance commitment therapy, and a bunch of other different modalities. And I essentially had them created and put together into a sales system now. And I was lucky enough in college to have a good friend who's a doctor in clinical psychology, who introduced me to a lot of these modalities, a lot of these ideas, and a lot of these concepts that I was inadvertently doing by communicating with my mother early on. And so it solidified what I already knew. And then I was able to essentially put this into my sales system. And so I think by myself, before I was really confident in this thing, I did 4,000 sales conversations, just one-on-one by myself with people in person, on the phone, and on the stage. Once I felt confident enough in it, I pushed it to my team. My team started doing it and they did really well. And I noticed that our sales reps stayed around longer. They were happier about what they were doing because there wasn't this onus to sell. There wasn't this onus to push. There wasn't this onus that you have to take someone's money. It was just take care of people, create this culture of care.
I think that's huge. And so, you know, the big question that really comes to mind, so, you know, how does it really work? What are the, you know, some of the principles and ideas to get it out there?
Yeah. So typically it goes in three steps. And I'm kind of introducing a fourth step, which I'll talk about as well. But the first step that I always teach people is we have to detach from the need to sell. In the sales world, we have this model of take people's money today or they're never coming back. You have to close the deal. If you don't close the deal, you're probably not going to close it. But it doesn't work that way. And the reason that people think of salesmen as sleazy and gross is because of that mentality. So we have to detach from the need to sell today and attach ourselves to the need to serve and build and develop a relationship. And a funny thing happens. If you stop thinking about the sale, if you stop thinking about the close, if you stop thinking about collecting the money, you're leaning out. And by the very dynamics of human nature, people start leaning in because now they don't see you as a salesperson. They see you as a leader worth following and they want it more because you seem to want it less. And so it leads you to a really interesting zone to where people not only buy, but they come back and buy. And you build yourself a pipeline that snowballs. People come back again and again and again because they trust you and they believe in you. And unfortunately, the current model of sales isn't built on trust or belief. It's built on manipulation and basically strong-arming people.
So then what's the second part there?
Yeah, so the second step is what I call achieving level 5 listening. I used to call this the cognitive questioner concept, but people have a hard time kind of wrapping their head around the cognitive questioner. So I'm starting to call it the level 5 listening concept. So you basically have 5 levels of listening, and the 5th level is what we call empathetic listening. So this is the idea that you step outside of your own brain, step outside of your own bias, step outside of your own model of the world, and listen to another human being and step into theirs. So we ask questions to identify what we would call the core belief or the core concept of belief. Because commonly people will say, there's an external problem. I want to lose weight. I need leads, whatever it is. But there's really an internal belief. I want to lose weight because I'm insecure and I don't feel comfortable in front of my husband. Or I want to get leads because I can't pay my mortgage and my family's going to be homeless. So there's the what they're saying, and then there's the real problem. So what we need to do is identify what the real problem is through a series of strategic questions, then connect the dots to the problem, from the problem to the past, so we can understand the triggers that have manifested along the way that are preventing success. And once we can help someone identify those triggers and connect those dots, it usually shows them that there's a much bigger problem at hand. There's a much bigger issue that's preventing success. It's not what they're talking about. It's what they're really not talking about and they don't want to talk about. And this does a funny thing. It moves someone from a position of me telling them to buy and moves them into a position to say they want to buy. Because if I tell them to buy, they're going to doubt it. Their sales resistance is going to come up and I'm just a salesman. But if they say they want it, well, now it's real. And now they believe it. And now they truly do want it.
So much is done today with social media through Facebook or LinkedIn. LinkedIn in particular, because a lot of people are there for the B2B aspects of a lot of business. And there's this whole idea of you find a name and you make a connection, but you don't really have a connection. You just have a one-to-one affiliation there. And how do you, in a scenario like that, how do you begin this dialogue and start sort of breaking into the get past why should we even be talking and what do you really have? And I'm going to assume you're going to want to try to sell me something. So what is that about?
Yeah, good question. So the way I do it is I become invested in that person. So I go to their LinkedIn profile. I like their latest posts. I comment on what they're talking about. And I take a few days just to invest myself into who they are and to make sure that they understand that I'm invested in actually paying attention to them. Because I find in LinkedIn, most people just send 1,000 cold DMs a day and they don't take a vested interest in the other person. So the first step is establishing what we call a reciprocal relationship. And so that's investing in the person, understanding what they're doing, what they're putting out, getting an idea of who they are, liking their content, commenting on their stuff, sharing it on your own page, and then moving into the actual DM or the internal conversation. And in that one, it's, Hey, name, I just read your blog post on blah, 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 and the thing you put out with XXX, and I really liked what you had to say about blank, blank, blank. Where'd you learn about this? I want to ask them questions. I want to understand about them because people like to talk about themselves. If I say, hey, I have this thing, do you want to buy it? They're going to say no and ignore me. But if I ask questions about them and I take a vested interest in who they are and what they're putting out, they're going to respond to it. They're going to be like, oh, yeah, I did this and that. And like, wow, that's really interesting. What led you to blah, blah? And so I'm essentially moving them through what we could consider a sales conversation, but really it's a conversation where I'm learning about this other human being.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that is so important because I certainly know I'm not alone. I get probably 100 a day of people just wanting to sell me lead generation services. They see I'm a coach, you know, and that is the number one outreach effort on LinkedIn. And I have a cut and paste response now that I've started using that says, if lead gen is what you do and this is how you start it, you're not qualified to help me.
Is this what you're going to do for me?
So, you know, maybe that's a little too facetious, or my wife accuses me of being a grouchy old man, but, and that's not what she calls it, but anyway, So I'm going to shift gears a little bit. So if someone is brand new to this and they just feel the pain of, they know they need to make that sale because, you know, maybe they have to make a mortgage payment or maybe they just simply want to grow their business. What's the process to kind of get started to figure this out?
Yeah, I think the process comes down to essentially the first step is recognizing that the more you want it, the less they want it. So even if you really do need it, we have to put off the idea that we don't necessarily want it as much. We can't grab at them. We can't say, hey, do you want to buy today? Hey, what can I do to make this sale? Hey, let's work out a deal. It's more of moving into the dynamic of a relationship to where you're questioning people. And I think the best way to get started in this is to be less excited about meeting someone and more interested in questioning their responses. So if someone comes to me and says, hey, I need to generate leads. Okay, well, what makes you want to generate leads? What's going on? Well, I just don't have enough. Well, why don't you have enough? Because I can't figure out how to do it. What's going on? Why haven't you been able to figure this out? Oh, because I've hired 87 different agencies and no one's been able to do it. Oh, gotcha. Well, why do you think they've been unsuccessful? Well, I don't know. I don't really know what I'm doing. Okay, I'm establishing some connection. They don't know what they're doing. They're hiring agencies. The agencies don't know what they're doing. Nobody knows what the KPIs are. So it's just a complete disaster. And I can essentially work down, okay, well, what happens if this keeps happening? What happens if you keep hiring agencies and they're nobody's successful? Well, I might have to shut the business down. Okay, well, what happens then? All you have to do is ask questions to people. And all you have to do is continue questioning their responses till you figure out what that desire is, that core desire. Like, I'm going to lose my house and my kids aren't going to have a home to live in. And once we understand that, that's when we can say, okay, well, I mean, here's what I'm feeling. You're in this position to where, and you relay it back to them. And now they have to hear the pain again. And so I'm not telling them to do anything. I'm not selling them anything. I'm just asking them questions and I'm helping understand the deeper meaning behind what's going on, which is one of the tenets of cognitive behavior therapy and psychology. Figure out what the core belief is, understand the triggers, and help someone deal with and work through the triggers that have come about.
How do you try to match this up with what I guess the common term is just a marketing effort? You know, like for instance, somebody that wants to sell a small business owner the notion of being on a, learn how to do YouTube ads to sell your business. And at the core of that, usually there's an idea of, if you're the provider, you have to help define the pain point and the problem. You have to bring that out, and that's what you feature in your video to get people's attention to come in. And even in that model, while I intellectually understand it, I find myself struggling to really make that be effective, because in my business, every client's different. Every client has a different pain point. They don't all come to me with the same set of pain points.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the first step in really being able to advertise at scale, especially on YouTube or like Facebook, is having a very specialized demographic and niche that you're working in, because then you can hit them a little bit harder with what they pain points are of that market. If I don't have a niche demographic and it's very broad, I'm probably not going to be successful in my ad strategy. So what I think about when I'm running ads like to YouTube is, okay, if I have five different demographics, which one is the most profitable that I could run ads to right now and probably earn a return? That's the one I'm going to run to first. And so it's like, okay, I want to run YouTube ads for chiropractors. All right. Well, okay. Now I can say, okay, well, what are the biggest problems chiropractors are going through? Well, they can't generate leads. It's hard to make ends meet. They usually have a lower end service up front, whatever it is. Then I can use that to say, hey, don't leave. If you're a chiropractor, this is for you. If not, you can jump off. But what I figured out this simple technique, this simple three-step strategy to where blah, 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 blah. And let me know if this sounds like you. Are you struggling with bang, 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 bang? Well, if that's you, I was there too. So now I'm emotionally investing them in my story. And this moves closer to like the copywriting realm, which inside of our 9-week Compassion Conversation Sales Academy, we teach sales and we teach copy. Because for me, it's important to not only be able to speak the word, but it's important to be able to write it as well. And if you can speak and write, well, now you achieve mastery in the whole process. And we teach this emotionally driven therapeutic process for both the spoken word and the written word, because it's so important to have both of these domains in case you want to run YouTube ads, in case you want to run Facebook ads. You have this entire gambit of sales under your belt.
Very interesting, and that does make sense. It for the average small business owner, I think the substance of your ad copy is as powerful as the ultimate message and the dialogue you have while you're engaged talking to a lead. They do go hand in hand. And I tell you what, Chandler, it's hard to believe we're kind of coming up on a break point here, but this has been rich. And when we come back on the other side, folks, we're going to dive a little bit deeper into this whole new way of looking at your sales strategy. We'll be right back.
Business is all about solving complex problems as fast as you can create them. Become the best problem solver by leading others to greatness too. And the first step is going to DougThorpe.com. Doug Thorpe is known globally for coaching entrepreneurs and business leaders, improving their performance and the work output of everyone surrounding them. You can find health, wealth, and happiness by learning to lead others to health, wealth, and happiness. Go to DougThorpe.com now and order Doug's books or hire him to coach your managers. That's Doug, T-H-O-R-P-E.com.
Well, hello again, everyone. You are listening to Leadership Powered by Common Sense. Today, I've got Chandler Walker with me. He is an expert in helping rethink and retool your sales process. Those are my words, not his. He has a much longer jargon for that that I'll let him repeat here in just a minute. But Chandler, in the first half of the show, we went through two of the main building blocks of managing a sales process, and we didn't get to the third element of your model. Why don't we pick up there? Tell us what that third piece is.
Yeah, the third model is what I call becoming a challenging leader. And the idea of sales often is like you have to be the nice guy. You have to agree with what they say, or I guess pretend to be the nice guy. Agree with what they say. Just do whatever you can to get the sale. But that's not leadership. That's just manipulation. That's being a bully and you're telling people what they need to hear to make the sale. So when we become challenging leaders, we recognize that if we can challenge people empathetically and appropriately in the discovery phase of the conversation, which is usually the initial first 15 minutes, we can remove all objections before they become a problem down the line. So when we enter into the challenging leader concept, what we do is we discover and identify things like spouse, finances, and I want to think about it, and we challenge them on it. And this isn't a situation to where it's like, hey, do you need your spouse on the call to make a decision today? Only winners make decisions by themselves, or do you need your spouse's permission? Like, we're not playing on ego like that. I think that's terrible and sort of gross to attack someone for wanting to communicate with their significant other. So we talk about things like alignment. If your spouse isn't involved or not aware, they can't help you be successful, and it's probably going to fail. This happens a lot in weight loss. The spouse isn't paying attention. They're bringing home Taco Bell, and other spouse fails because they want to eat Taco Bell too.
Right.
Same thing in business. This person wants lead generation. A business partner doesn't understand what they're doing. They don't want to spend the money on it. The thing fails. So if nobody's in alignment, the thing's going to fail. So we need to challenge them on alignment across the board. And if they're not aligned, it's probably not the best fit. Then we need to understand finances. People are so afraid to talk about money because we're taught that it's impolite. But if I can't talk to someone, another business owner, about their finances and where they're at, how can I ethically make a decision that they're okay to enroll in my program? And you want to make sure you understand finances. So number one, you know what you can pitch for a price point. And number two, can they afford it? Are you putting someone in your program who's on the last ditch effort to save their business? If that's the case, for me, ethically, it's probably, I don't want them in my program because I don't want desperation in there because it doesn't lead to a good place. And then the last one we look at is I want to think about it. That comes up because people aren't sure that you can solve their problem. Their wall of sales resistance is up and they don't see you as a leader or someone worth working with. So when some people start saying, when you ask, hey, so does all that sound okay? Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, what makes it sound okay? Oh, well, because you said this and that, I really need this. All right, well, so on like a scale of 1 to 10, where do you think you're at? Does this even sound like something you might be interested in? Oh yeah, I'm a 9. Ah, cool. That's pretty high. Well, why not like a 2? Why so high? I'm challenging them every step of the way. Like, no, you cannot buy my service until I challenge you appropriately and we recognize that you need this thing. I tell people, I will fight you to the bitter end to make sure you don't buy this thing for your own benefit and your own protection. I want to make sure that when you say I'm in, that's exciting and you're pumped. Because if you're not pumped and excited, well, guess what? Refund requests come in. Buyer's remorse comes in. And we want to avoid that by being challenging leaders and helping people affectionately and appropriately make a decision that's good for them. Like I said earlier, if they say it, they believe it and it's real. If I say it, it's not true anymore and they'll doubt it.
That's pretty radical, actually. And I'm sitting here pausing and thinking about it. So it's almost like the first time you get a yes, I'm in, you really challenge that. It's just almost like saying, are you sure? You sure?
Exactly.
You really want to, have you really thought about this?
They say, yes, I'm in. You're like, okay, well, awesome. But I want to pause for a moment. Are you sure this is what you need? Are you sure this is exactly where you want to go? And people are taken aback. They don't understand what you're doing. Like, wait, hold on. Yes, I want to buy this thing. Please give it to me. And so, like, I'm leaning out and I'm not interested. They're leaning in. They're very interested because I forced them to sell themselves and I'm not telling them what to do.
How often after the second or third challenge do you get somebody to say, you know, you're right. I probably need to keep looking, or I need to go somewhere else, or I need to do something different.
Usually once we get to the challenging statements at this point, they're basically all in. What I find is when we start getting out of discovery, you'll get someone who's like, oh yeah, it sounds okay. Oh, okay. Just okay. Well, tell me a little bit about what you mean by that. And so that's when we start to say, okay, well, it doesn't really seem like there's a lot of synergy here. Maybe this doesn't really make sense. And that's when you'll get the agree. Oh yeah, you know what? Maybe I just don't know what I'm doing. And that's when you can let them go. You're not trying to convince them to stay. You're trying to convince them to leave.
Yeah. So do you see the need to have, after you get through this whole process, is there still a deeper dive onboarding kind of thing when you take clients into your program?
Yeah. So when we take clients into our program, what'll happen is we'll do the sale and then they'll get an onboarding form. They'll fill it out. They'll get access to our online platform. And inside the online platform, what happens is they have to watch videos and they have to write out their frameworks. So we have frameworks that we work off of. Once they write out their frameworks, they have to do a video showing us that they understand the framework. We'll look at it and give them a green light to move forward, or we'll look at it, give them feedback. They'll go back, reevaluate, redo it. Because what this does is it teaches them not only how to work in frameworks, but how to rewrite and adjust and how to modify, which removes them from the need to use a script. And I think that's a big problem in sales as well. You get on the phone with someone and you can tell. It's like, so talk to me about your thing and I'm very excited to meet you. And you know they're reading off a script. So we want to move people to work to frameworks so it sounds genuine and real. And they understand in real time how to adjust and modify if necessary so they truly achieve mastery. So we make them go through this process in terms of the spoken sales. And then we go through this process in terms of the written sales. So the copy and the wording. And we don't want to work through their offer as well. So one thing that I think business owners don't do well is productize their service. And so one of the and what that means is setting up your service so it's easy to understand, it seems new, it feels unique, and it feels safe. If it feels new, unique, and safe for people, they'll jump in. If it feels like something that everybody's doing, they're not going to be interested because you're now a commodity.
You know, I think that's a great point, and maybe a whole nother discussion, because for people that are in a service type business, sometimes it's hard. I'm thinking of a group I mentor and facilitate. It's a group of small business owners, and everybody is really afraid of turning their service into a commodity, because commodities get beat up on price. You know, that's just the nature of that game. So they are still trying to work on true differentiation of why their service is better than others. And being able to articulate that as either the creator, founder, owner is a lot of times harder than it seems. You would think the owner would know what they're doing and how they describe it, but there's this blindness that goes with that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's a big problem, because you're like the technician as the owner. You're so deep into it, you understand the intricacies that other people don't, and that's not really what they need to know. They need to understand the high level overview. And think about like our sales offer. We teach compassion conversations, how to sell without manipulation, aggressive tactics, or feeling salesy in a simple 3-step strategy. Detach from the need to sell, become a level 5 listener, and create challenging leadership. That sounds new, unique, and safe, because it is. And the same token on my weight loss offer we originally had was, it's not mindset we're working on, it's the brain code rewire. We help you rewire your brain code to stop fighting cravings and finally lose weight through our neuronutrition method. It sounds new, unique, and safe. It sounds better. And these are ultimately the tenets that I think business owners really need to understand and work on in terms of copy and really defining and creating something that is new, unique, and safe.
I like that phrase, new, unique, and safe. That's an interesting twist. And again, I'm thinking of several of my client companies and how they're doing it. And probably if I were talking with them about that, those three words wouldn't describe what they're doing.
Exactly.
I've got one guy, as a for instance, he's running an auto body franchise shop, and he bought a local franchise that was pre-existing, but he's really turned it around. And you would think, well, that's heavily commoditized, you know, get your car painted, get your bumper repaired, whatever. That's you can do that in 100 places nearby. But you know, part of what he's doing to make it new, unique, and safe is he's really ramped up the relationship aspects of coming in and handing your baby, you know, this beast of a vehicle you drive, you know, hand that over to somebody that's going to either give it a paint job or repair it then in the bumper. And there is a kind of a fear and a doubt there. So making it feel safe is really quite a valuable aspect of it.
Yeah, exactly. If people don't feel safe, if they feel like something's sketchy, or if they feel like something's not there, they're not going to do it, because the second someone is fearful or doesn't understand, they back away and they don't want to be part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I would think that would apply to a lot of things that are in the realm of health and nutrition. Certainly those people out there that are doing so-called life coaching, even my own colleagues in the executive coaching realm, it's like, well, how's that really new? How's that particularly unique? And safe is maybe even easier to understand for those things than, but I would think in nutrition and weight loss, safe may be a big problem. You know, people are saying, yeah, but if you're going to talk to me about supplements, are they really safe? What, you know, where's that coming from?
Yeah, exactly. I think it's a big problem. You'll find, hey, what supplements should I use? Are those safe? And how is this safe? I've tried 85 different diets in the past. What makes this different is a big question you get in like weight loss, maybe even in terms of like life coaching. Okay, well, you're a life coach. How can you help me? I've worked with 85 different coaches. So you have to have that new mechanism that's unique, and that aspect that makes it appear or feel safe or just different for people. And that's when they lean in and they want more. So it's like in our weight loss program, one of our methods is neuronutrition. That sounds a lot better than we're going to give you meal plans and nutritional help. And you say, we're going to use neuronutrition. Sounds a lot different. Sounds a lot better. When we say the brain code rewire, that sounds way better than mindset. It sounds unique and it sounds a little bit safer. And that's ultimately what we want to build. If you're a life coach or like an executive coach and you help people through like overwork or overwhelm, everybody's doing that. So you have to learn how to adjust that to being something different. We call it the overworked paradox technique or something like that, because now it's different. Now it's unique. And now people will perk up because, oh, I haven't heard of this before. This is interesting.
Yeah. So one might say that gets us back to the whole notion of writing some creative ad copy that can describe and package the offering with something that is new and unique, when ultimately it might be some, you know, basic principles that have been around for a long time. It's just, as a coach might know, it's hard to get people to pay attention to it. You know, you offer it, you teach it, but people still have to embrace it and follow it for it to be effective.
Yeah, exactly. You have to actually do it to master it. And this is what I tell people a lot with copy and content in general. If you just say you're going to do it and you don't do it, it never happens. Or if you do it haphazardly and not so often, you're not going to get better at it. The best way to get better at copy is to write copy every day. I had a mentor a long time ago, Gary Halbert, one of the best copywriters in existence. And his philosophy was, well, you set a 15-minute timer and you sit at your desk and you write or you stare at the wall. And a funny thing happens. After you're done staring at the wall, you write some really good words over time, and that your brain starts to get stimulated in that environment.
That's interesting. Good ways to break the habit. Well, Chandler, if folks want to get a hold of you and tap into some of this great information, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Yeah. So if you want my 9-step framework to creating compassion conversations, you can just go to 9step.cultureofcare.life. That's the number 9step.cultureofcare.life. And if you want to connect with me or you're interested in the Academy, just DM me on Instagram. My Instagram is instagram.com/Chandler_SAF. And just DM me in if you're interested in that environment. Otherwise, just get that 9-step framework. It literally outlines our entire process. My philosophy is just give it away for free and then people will come to you for coaching because they need it.
Yeah. No, that's good. And that's really helpful. And we'll have all that information in the show notes, folks, if you missed that during the audio. But Chandler, it's been great having you here and some exciting information. And I'm going to have to consume it. I'm going to have to get your 9 steps and check it out and see what I can do with it. It's certainly helpful to have that different mindset about it and get, if you're the owner of the business and trying to be the service provider, get your head out of that bog of I don't like sales. I don't want to be that icky sales guy. I do want to help my clients. I want to serve. I know for a fact, based on prior experience, that people can benefit from what I'm doing. It's just getting it out there for more to engage.
Yeah, exactly. That's the real big thing. And for me, I was never about aggressive tactics. I was never about just being a jerk to make the sale. And ultimately, my own madness led to creating this concept.
It's sometimes a great stimulator.
Exactly.
Well, again, Chandler, thanks for being on the show. And we really appreciate your insight and information here. Well, folks, that wraps up another episode. And thank you for listening in. Stay tuned for more on this and other channels. Thank you.
You've been listening to Leadership Powered by Common Sense, hosted by Doug Thorpe. If you would like to know more about the coaching and advisory services he provides, visit DougThorpe.com. This program is being brought to you by Headway Exec, Leadership Coaching and Business Advisory Services. Visit us on the web at HeadwayExec.com.